Welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It is episode 4. I can already tell, I'm peaking to start. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Good afternoon, Bob. It's a little bit later, but good afternoon.
A little bit later. We usually tape in the morning, but we're taping in the early afternoon. You know what I love about the fact that you say, ooh, look at my levels, they're peaking?
Yeah.
You don't feel any necessary move to like change them. It's just you're going to have to listen to me on overdrive.
Yeah, that's...
I dig that about you, Matt.
I know, I did. I'm
By the way, Matt's our technical director.
Yeah.
So if you listen to the emergency pod where we did our Wonder Woman review last week, yep, and you notice that the levels were all over the place, I'm not saying it's Matt's fault because I'm not the technical director. I'm not qualified to make that assessment.
But
all I know is one person is handling the tech.
That's great, Bob. That's
we need an intern. Can we just like get that out there right now? We need an intern, somebody who understands tech.
Oh, that would be great. If you would like to intern for us... And there is no money at all, but you can have all the water and tea you want. I'll even provide lemon. I will provide lemon. Also, avocado. I hear the young kids love that avocado. I'll provide avocado. That's really basic.
Avocado toast. Yeah. All you can eat.
Yeah.
Huge show coming up today. We've got the Cavs and the Warriors game 3 flameout last night for LeBron and the boys.
Yep.
Going to talk some Jays who redeemed themselves in Oakland with a extra innings victory yesterday. The big question this week, this is one that Maddie came up with, and I wasn't sure about it at first, but I actually really, really like it. Can you enjoy a great performance from a player in a lousy game where they are getting blown out?
Yeah.
I think you probably know where this comes from.
Yeah, it comes from Golden State and Cleveland. And, you know, we'll get more into it, but a lot of people are saying, no, this series is great because you've such beautiful basketball. And can it really be enjoyable when it's not compelling? So we'll get into that.
Top 5 female action heroes,
yep,
in honor of Wonder Woman, which is the biggest movie in the world right now, which you and I saw. We both liked, didn't necessarily love, but both liked.
Yes.
So we'll get into female action heroes later. And Maddie, I want to start off with an observation before we dive into our takeaways.
Yeah.
I went to a fancy event, and I don't do that a lot. It was Saturday. I went to the McMichael Gallery. There was this big gala that I was invited to. It was a lovely event. The food was great. The band was great. It was a lot of fun. And it was your kind of event. It was your kind of place, your people. Why do all the rich guys under 35 years old all look like Jared Kushner?
It's a good question. I think it's because, okay, and this is something that we need to raise money for, start a Kickstarter account. We need better role models for rich whitey because we don't have enough. And then, you know, in the 80s, everyone was looking at Gordon Gekko, and they did that for a long time, and that went into Pat Riley. And, you know, maybe Rich Whitey just needs more and more, different people to look up to, so you get different looks. But, yeah, you do get a lot of that.
Okay, yeah. I had this woman walk up to me, and she said to me, as I was standing there holding my water, looking out over this beautiful garden, and people milling about all in their suits and fancy dresses.
Did you have a good time, by the way?
I liked it. I had a nice time. I have a kick with this stuff. When I was younger, I used to have a real chip on my shoulder, but now I just look at it as a slice of life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my thing. It's not where I belong, but, you know, I get a kick. But this woman walked up to me, and we chatted for about 30 seconds, and then she said to me, so how do you make your money? And my mind cycled through the real answers, severance package.
Yeah.
And then it quickly defaulted to the even more real answer, living off my wife's coattails.
There you go.
And then I just said, broadcasting.
Broadcasting. Yeah, just smart.
Yeah. I do a podcast with Matt, lady.
It's a lot of money. It's really bringing
in the cash. Toast for the intern.
Exactly. So one thing I wanted to talk about is as you were coming here, the James Comey, the Senate hearing.
He's testifying.
Yeah, it was going on. And I was dutifully decided, okay, I'm going to record it. So I recorded it all on CNN. And then I'm sitting there and watching it. And I am just getting so bored. Like, I realize there are many limitations when it comes to intelligence. And that just, all the questions and answers, it just sounds so boring and everyone's doing their spin. I actually went on an SCTV deep dive. Remember the Martin Short character where he was Nathan Thurman or something and he was on testimony and he was smoking the cigarette and he was sweating all the time? I went into that and then finally, you know what I did, Bob?
What did you do, man?
I watched Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm not smart enough for this. I'll wait for Twitter to tell me how I should feel, but there I was. I was so ready to get into it, to be all political. And then
all right, so the former director of the FBI, who was unceremoniously fired by the president, is coming out and testifying before the Senate.
Yes.
Giving possible disclosure as to malfeasance between the Russians and the Americans that might have corrupted the results of the American election.
That's right.
And your instinct was, this is hard. I'm going to watch Curb.
Yeah. Oh, and SCTV. Let's be fair. I did go
I'm not judgy. I didn't watch it. I guess I'll probably go into... I'll go to Twitter later and just see what the reaction is. It's just funny. You know what I actually kind of dig about that, Maddie? Good for you for being honest enough.
I'm being honest about it.
I love it.
And by the way, you know what I've already done?
What have you already done?
I've already deleted on my PVR, you know, the CNN, the Comey hearings. I'm like...
Was it one of those where you had to do a six-hour block on your PVR and you have to make sure you have enough space?
Yeah. And I record all. But then I'm like, I'm not going to go back and watch it. You know, it's like asking for a new copy of Ulysses. You're not going to read it. It's just going to sit there on your, on your library.
Yeah, it's inevitable. If you tape something and it's more than 3 hours long, you will never watch all of it.
Yeah.
Never. I had all the blanket coverage of Game 3 last night because I had to go to a dinner. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it when I got home at about 11. And you're firing through the commercials and you're like, oh, I don't really see any interesting plays here. So shuttling through the second quarter. It is an inevitable truth that if you tape anything and it is longer than 3 hours, you will never watch it all.
There will be some fast forward or the 30-second skip. Absolutely.
Well, since we're sort of on the cusp of the NBA here anyway, do you want to start off with the first takeaway, Maddie?
Yeah, the first takeaway, I'm going to go more on the NBA side. And everyone knows now, Golden State defeated Cleveland, where Cleveland just, they blew that game. And the takeaway from this is, Durant is not a better player than LeBron, but Durant on Golden State is a better player than LeBron is on Cleveland. And that final minute was unbelievable. You had Cleveland was up 113-111. Mm-hmm. Durant guarding LeBron forces LeBron, what LeBron does, to pass, which admirable thing to Kyle Korver. Korver misses, which he did all game long. Who gets the rebound? Durant. 4 seconds later, there's 19 seconds on the shot clock, and he takes the three. They win the game. It was a hell of a sequence of defense, rebound, hits the winning shot. The game ends on an 11-0 run for Golden State, but Durant is a better player on Golden State than LeBron is on Cleveland.
I think you importantly identified the moment that Golden State was going to win. We thought that from the beginning, and I think most people felt that. Most experts thought, you know, they'll win in five, maybe six. Some people got really nutty with it and thought this could be a seven-game series. But by and large, people looked at the two rosters and said, look, Golden State's just better, and they've proven exactly that. But you nailed it, because not only has Durant been great, he has been great, but now he has the moment. And if you're going to put your name into history, if you're going to kind of live in that infamous space where you're we just remember what you did in a special way, you have to have a moment. LeBron had the block last year.
LeBron had the block.
Right? And even though he was great all series long, we talk about how that block was a defining moment. So now Kevin Durant has that.
Yeah.
We're shaping this up for history now, which is funny because it's his first ring. But the way we talked about Durant going into the season versus how we talk about him now, completely different. Completely different.
Is it? It may be different for you.
Defensively, it is. I think that this team has allowed him to be better defensively.
It's allowed him to be everything better because he doesn't have to exert as much. Here's the thing.
Would you have said that Kevin Durant was the second best player in the league going into this season? You might have, actually.
Yeah, you might have. Absolutely. There'd be no one would yell or scream to that.
Right.
LeBron James, I believe, would have won an NBA title if you gave him James Harden and you gave him Westbrook and you gave him young Serge Ibaka. Kevin Durant was never able to do that. But Kevin Durant, now with Draymond Green, with Steph Curry, and with Klay Thompson, who was keeping Golden State in that game until Durant finally took over, because Klay Thompson, their fourth best player, had like 30 points.
Yeah, he did. You know, Maddie, I know that today the conversation about Golden State being this team for the ages is inevitable, and they are a team for the ages. But Cleveland blew that. Cleveland should have won that game. This should be 2-1. Not only were they up 113-111, Maddie, they were up 113-109, and they were up out at a minute 30.
Oh, yeah, they blew it.
And even when they went down one, There was about 45 seconds left on the clock, which means they had the ability to play two for one. And they futzed around, burnt clock, didn't score, and ultimately found themselves with their backs against the wall. And that was just really sloppy playing, sloppy coaching. I thought the play that they drew out of the timeout where they tried to find LeBron in the corner for the three.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
With Andre Iguodala on him, we're going to throw him deep into the corner. And Iguodala's been on him like a shirt all game long. Like, and never mind all game long, every time Iguodala plays him, he's on him tough. That was a terrible play. Like, I don't feel like we're calling out Ty Lue enough for the management of those final 2 minutes against a great team.
Yeah, I think the reason why Ty Lue is getting a pass is because we know inevitably if you had Phil Jackson and Red Auerbach and Greg Popovich and stuffed them all into one meat casing, they could not coach their way past this Golden State team.
I disagree. Cleveland should have won yesterday.
Yes, they should have won yesterday.
Kyrie had a great game. LeBron had a great game. Even though Love didn't have a big game in terms of points, he was terrific in rebounding, and he had six steals. Like J.R. Smith played a much better game. They scored 113,
Bob, Matt. I agree with you. They were going to – any good coach wins game three. But I think the reason why Tyronn Lue may be getting a bit of a pass, two reasons. One, because we know in the end – they're not beating Golden State. And no great coaching is beating Golden State. And the second point is that we focus so much on LeBron. How come LeBron didn't score? Well, LeBron, for the first 40, you know, for everything up until that moment, gave everything and more. He should have had a triple-double. 39 points, 13 or whatever rebounds, only 9 assists. That's because Love and Korver couldn't hit a thing. So we like to focus more on LeBron than on the coach.
I think that's fair to say. And, you know, in fairness to criticizing LeBron, even though he did have that great game, Durant did shoot that three over him. And he was hanging back. And in the post game, it was interesting. Yeah. Durant said, I saw he was guarding me and his feet were behind the three-point line, knowing that he had space. So he gave him just enough space. And I'd have to see that play in its entirety because it's possible maybe he was picked or he couldn't get to the spot quickly enough. But just like that's the Golden State move, to dribble down the court and to pull up behind three. Like they've been guarding against that the entire series, almost obsessively. So I don't know that LeBron played the best he could have on KD at that moment.
Didn't. I think he was tired. You know, in the end, I think part of it...
And I think he played all but of 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, there was one point where he sat down when there's like 45 seconds left, I think, in the second quarter. Because we've seen what happens. When LeBron goes out, Golden State always goes on a run. You know who's the biggest loser in all of this?
No, who?
Kawhi Leonard. Because he's one of the top four players, maybe five, top five players in the NBA. And it doesn't matter. Unless some extraordinary luck and infusion of talent goes San Antonio's way, he's always going to lose. He's going to lose to this team. He got swept this last year. And that's my hipster pick, by the way, because there's a lot of losers. Some of it will come up more in the big question. But I couldn't help but think, wow, if you're Kawhi Leonard, you're like, what the hell can I do?
You're probably the best two-way player in the game.
You are, yeah, absolutely.
And you don't really have a shot at a title, even though you're playing for the universally acknowledged smartest franchise in the league, the one that's had the most success historically in the modern era. That's a tough one. You know what really stands out to me is how nutty the conversation that LeBron is better than MJ was going into this series. And I know that you felt that that was legit and on the table.
It is. It still is legit and on the table.
There's no way, Maddie. There's no way that at the end of this series, people are saying LeBron is still better than MJ.
If you want to make that argument, I would allow that argument.
Really?
Yes, 100%. Jordan never faced a team like this. Never. And how many times in the finals has LeBron James been a favorite? Almost never. I think only this is his seventh finals. I'd say 4 or 5 times.
Matt, his
team has been the underdog.
We went into the series talking about, is Jordan the greatest ever? Now we're having the conversation, is he still the best guy in the league now? So Mike, there was never a conversation around Michael like, is anybody better than Michael? Never, never. In that entire span that he played, no one ever said, once he kind of hit that Jordan-esque level and he stayed up there, like number two was so far behind, you couldn't even see them in the rearview mirror. That's not the case with LeBron. LeBron, like right now, LeBron and KD, would you not agree? Like you said it yourself as the beginning of the takeaway that on this team, KD is better than LBJ, right?
Yes, I did.
You would never have had that conversation in any context about Jordan. He was always the best.
Because you never had those kind of super teams when Michael Jordan was at the peak of his powers.
Did Jordan have a super team?
Did Jordan
have a super team? Because, that 95 year with the Bulls, there were two All-Stars on that team. Mm-hmm. One was Michael and the other one was Scottie.
Yep.
Two All-Stars. There are four
yes.
on this Golden State team. So can you really say that Michael had a super team?
No, and I actually proved my point. There wasn't super teams back then, and now there is now, and that's why when we talk about LeBron James, and if you put him on Golden State, this Golden State team is the most unique team we have ever seen in the NBA, where it required a perfect set of circumstances to happen to get all the stars to align.
We're going to have to disagree on this one. I think if we actually pull this one apart and we do a deep dive on it, maybe we'll do that one of these days on the pod during the big question. But yeah. I'm pretty sure I could sway you back to my opinion here. I'm pretty sure I could.
I could go that way. Also, one thing.
Can we agree on one thing, though?
J.R. Smith is a coward.
What, because he deleted his tweet?
Yeah. If you're going to be a dummy and say, Cavs in seven... If you're going to be a dummy, then stand by being a dummy. Don't be a dummy and then go, oh, I'm going to get rid of it. And then everyone on Twitter is like, I love you, J.R. Smith. No, he's a fool.
Someone has to come up with an excuse, like a good list of reasons why your tweet suddenly disappeared.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's always, I was hacked, mm-hmm. which almost nobody believes.
Yep.
Then I guess J.R. is going with the I didn't write it. So maybe somebody else, because like that was sort of how he defended himself was, I didn't write that. Implying that maybe one of his friends did, or maybe one of his family did on his account.
That would be a hell of a troll job.
Can you imagine?
Could you imagine like one of his friends doing that? Like, oh my, like, we all love when you play practical jokes on your friends. I mean, it's always a fun thing to do. That would be a hell of a practical joke.
Do you remember the time I took over your Twitter feed because you lost a bet on our old radio show?
Oh, yeah.
And for 1 hour, I was allowed to tweet anything I wanted. Yeah. I took it way too easy on you.
You did.
There were pictures of Ron Dane. There were tweets about how much you love Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, you did go easy. You could have gone a lot tougher.
Could have been worse. I think I did a whole slew of them about how you love Pinot Noir. What's the worst wine?
No.
What's the worst wine? Pinot Grigio?
Yeah, Pinot Grigio.
Okay, yeah. It was a whole bunch of things about how much you love the taste of, especially Ontario Pinot Grigio, I believe.
It's all, Pinot Grigio is liquid cold. Everyone, I mean, the good Pinot Grigio you can't get here in Ontario. And there is good Pinot Grigio. Germain is a great producer in the Fruli region. But at the same point, most of it's crap.
You know why I'm laughing, Matt? Nobody could see me, but maybe you can hear me just chuckling in the background. Is you stopped yourself from saying, everybody knows this is no good, right? Like, I actually heard, if you play this back, you'll hear Matt's about to say, everybody knows this about Pinot Grigio, but he stopped himself.
Yeah, I did. I did.
So how do you make your money, Matt?
Broadcasting. Unfortunately, not on the backs of my girlfriend. Come on, Amy.
Oh, man. All right. So should I do my takeaway here?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I want to do the Jays, actually.
Okay.
Because I can't help but be fascinated by this team right now. Mm-hmm. They're 2 games under .500.
Yep.
They looked like they were going to get swept out in Oakland, but yesterday in the afternoon game, they wind up winning 7-5. Against Oakland in the 10th inning. Two home runs for Justin Smoke. I got a few takeaways, but I want to start with this one because this is just how nutty this season is. And it feels like we never have a normal season with the Jays where things go as expected. Is Justin Smoke the only All-Star candidate from the Toronto Blue Jays this year?
17 home runs. Only Aaron Judge in the American League has more. 42 RBI, tied for third in the American League. He's hitting .291. The Justin Smoke start to this year is so unexpected, and it provides a lot of cover for the we miss Edwin Encarnacion. It's crazy.
Now, he might just do a Michael Saunders where he has the super hot first half. Yeah. He becomes an all-star, and then he disappears during the second half. I would think that that would be the likely thing that's about to happen, just because over the course of his career, Justin Smoke might be the definitive just a guy.
Yeah.
1.5 wins above replacement over the course of his career. Just literally right down the line. Mm-hmm. Justin Smoke, just a guy.
Yeah, he's fine. Hey, there's Justin Smoke. Yeah, it's
actually a good nickname for him. Just a guy Smoke?
I don't think.
Or it's all smoke?
Smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors. Yeah, high five.
There it is.
High five.
Bam.
Love that one.
I don't think he knows.
Yeah, probably not. No. He's second right now in the American League amongst first basemen in slugging percentage. He is first in RBI. He's first in home runs. He's second in average, batting average at .291. Like, nobody expected this from him.
No.
So it's fun, right?
Yeah.
It's fun. I watched yesterday, and it was one of those weird games where it was a good news, bad news scenario. Like, they got the bad start, but then the bullpen came in, tread water long enough, Osuna eventually gets the save. Their arms are going to fall off, Matty.
Yep.
That bullpen's arm, collectively, there is going to be this big thud in the bullpen area of the Rogers Center as 8 arms drop to the ground and lie there like mannequin arms. sometime at the end of July.
Yeah, I mean, I said it a couple of weeks ago. The Jays, and this was only after about the first month of the season or so, they led at least the American League, maybe all of Major League Baseball, in innings pitched by the bullpen. And it's not like that's changing. Now, maybe, you know, Sanchez comes back and that helps, and, you know, Hap, you know, rebound, you know, gets back into form from last year. There are things that can happen that can help alleviate it. But you're right. The bullpen is in a lot of trouble.
I was listening to the ball game on the radio yesterday just because it was the afternoon and you're running around and doing errands and stuff. And Jerry Howarth, two things I love about him. First of all, he had a great stat. So whoever fed him this, or if he fed it himself, good for him. But in the last 35 games, the Jays starters have only Jays have only gotten seven innings out of a starter three times. Ooh. In the last 35 games.
That's going to come back. It's cumulative. Eventually, that's the sort of stat that comes back to bites you in the ass.
I thought it was a great stat. And then the other thing I loved about Howarth yesterday is he's getting that vibe where he just doesn't care what anyone thinks anymore about what he has to say. Chris Coughlin misplays that ball and it turns into a triple.
Yeah.
And he's just like, Chris Coughlin has played that ball. If he takes a different angle to that ball, that's an out.
Yeah.
And we came this far away from saying, look, there's a gigantic chasm in left field right now. It's a gaping hole. It's a black hole of emotions out there. And now I find that I'm drawn more and more to listening to him because I just feel more and more he's going to be like angry, older broadcaster.
But what you don't want is like what Remy did with the Red Sox when he was complaining about a translator being used for Tanaka. It's like you want the broadcaster to be an I don't give a bleep, as long as it doesn't cross that one line when everyone is just uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't think he's that guy. I don't see that happening. I agree. But I just love the fact that he was just shy of admonishing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Chris Coughlin for blowing it.
We all do our jobs better when we do it fearlessly. And unfortunately, in life, a lot of times you can't do it fearlessly because of job security and 100 other reasons. But Jerry certainly can. I got one little stat for you.
Okay, go for it.
Jay's biggest issue?
Okay.
Beyond the bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
11-18 in their own division. They are lousy against the American League East. And if there's any chance for them to climb back into a reasonable wild card chase, that number's got to change.
The Houston Astros are doing great. They're playing 700 ball. But then the rest of the action is all in the American League East. The one of the toughest things the Jays have to face is the fact that the Yankees are better than anyone expected.
Yep.
And if the playoffs started today, the two wild card teams would be from the American League East.
Yeah.
You would have the Sox and the Orioles in. So it's one thing to start off poorly in a division where the teams aren't that great. You know, this, you know, AFC South, I'm looking at you. But in the AL East and MLB, like, I just don't see it happening, which is why this year is so fascinating to me. Like, Donaldson hits the home run yesterday, right?
Yep.
It's exciting. He's back. We're all happy. If I'm Shapiro, of course I'm happy in the moment, but I'm also thinking, look, don't get comfortable because we're going to deal with this guy in the offseason. And Marco Estrada is, you know, he's third in the American League in strikeouts right now.
Really?
Yeah, he's got 90. He's only behind Chris Sale and Chris Archer.
Damn, he's been good since he got
here.
He's
been really good. And my bold prediction here, Matt, right, is he's getting traded at the deadline. He's a free agent.
Yeah, he's a free agent.
He's 33 years old.
Yeah.
You've got a team that's not going to make the playoffs. And even if they do, it's a cheap pop. It's not real. This team doesn't have a tremendously deep core. Its best players are its older players. Even Devin Travis gets hurt again. And is he not feeling a little loopily these days with how he gets hurt all the time?
Yep.
So if I'm Shapiro and I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, I need to turn over my team and probably turn over my organization so I get better at producing, drafting, but then also turning drafted players into actual MLB players.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, Alex Anthopoulos doesn't have an enormous record of drafting guys and having them. I mean, even the chips that we traded to other teams, you know, I mean, obviously Noah Syndergaard's a different thing, but whether it's Jeff Hoffman or Justin Nicolino, we'll see if Franklin Barreto turns in anything. But by and large, these big pieces that we were afraid to get rid of, we'll see if they turn in anything. The Jays haven't been great at that. And if I'm Shapiro, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, I'm blowing it up.
Yeah.
You know, I might not do it all at once, but I'm definitely getting rid of most of this.
And then it's like, you know, if Estrada stays healthy and performs near this level, there's no reason to think he won't. He's been like this since he got here as a Blue Jay. Is there to be so many teams lining up for that?
Right.
You know, like, it won't take that long for a Steven Strasburg injury to happen again in the Nationals. I'm just looking at deep pocket teams who have always flamed out early in the playoffs. Maybe they make a run for them. St. Louis, a lot of money, five games under 500. The Dodgers, they're in third right now in the West, I'm just looking at the teams with a lot of money that don't mind throwing it around. And
the Dodgers are the team that jumps to mind to me. Maybe that's the easy pick. But, you know, they're thinking, okay, we got to beat the Cubs. You know, maybe the Nationals are looking at it and thinking we got to make a run at the Cubs. You know, we've got a lot of prospects. The Dodgers just like to make big moves.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something there. I don't know, Maddie. We'll have to see. But I just know that July 31st is the trade deadline. And I think it's going to be fascinating this year. And I have a feeling it's going to be with a bang and not a whimper. In years past, people have been angry because they've whimpered their way through it. And then, of course, Alex makes the big moves going back a couple of years. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those years.
Yeah.
Where there's just big moves.
Coming up later, we're going to do our top five female action characters, right? Now, like movie, because it could be like comic. Is that what?
Yep. Comics, books, yeah. Video games.
We're going to do that.
We're going to switch it up a little bit this time, because ordinarily you give the list.
Yes.
And then I rip it.
Yes.
But this time I'm going to give the list and you're going to probably rip it.
I'm just going to say something right now.
Okay.
Because I'm nicer than you.
Okay. You are nicer than me.
Yeah. If there is not one, there's one specific name that better be on there. And if it's not on there, I'm going to raise
Matt,
holy hell.
It's on there.
Okay.
Like, you haven't seen my list, and I don't even know who you are. But, like, okay, look, mind meld with me for 1 second.
Okay.
See, I told you. It's okay. Fine. It's going to be on there.
Better be.
By the way, Matt and I just gazed deeply into our eyes. Speaking of the art of narration, can you tell people what time it is as we tape this?
It is.
Because it is initially live.
Yeah, 1:30.
Oh, it must be time for lunch.
Yes.
I'm going to fire up my lunch right now, Maddie.
Oh,
do you want to narrate?
Yes, absolutely.
Here we go.
As people may know, Bob is on some special diet, which is basically 2 shakes, and then he gets to measure out some lean protein and vegetables, and that is all he gets to eat. Coming out is a Essentials Protein Shake Vanilla, and then there's another container, probably some other sort of powder. In his knapsack, I gotta tell you, this knapsack feels like, that's like a knapsack for like a 12-year-old. What
like
are you doing?
The kids from Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly. You are one of the kids from Stranger Things. Okay, now he's putting a very, very dark green powder in the top of a glass of water. He's opening up a bag that looks like it would be potato chips, but nope, again, it is protein shake vanilla. Arbonne Essentials. And Arbonne is spelled with 2 N's. That's just real snobby. And now he's put it all in, and he's mixing it together.
I forgot my magic bullet.
Oh, this is even worse.
So I'm going to have to drink it all clumpy.
You have just got clumpy green goop, and he's pushing it down. This looks horrible. We can pick up the,
Can you get that?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I smell it?
Yeah. All right, so I'm back on mic. Thank you for narrating, Maddie.
Yeah, it smells like your typical vanilla whey protein thing.
All right, here we go.
Is this lunch?
Mm-hmm.
Gurgle, gurgle, gurgle.
You know what's the worst news, Matt? Mm. It's working.
Oh, you're losing weight?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I have way more energy, and my skin is, you know, bright, and my eyes are clear.
Well, that's a good thing.
Well, yes, but I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't work so I would never have to look down this road again for answers. But because it's working now, I'm kind of tied to it.
Yeah.
Nah, what are you going to do?
That looks delicious.
So we got our top five coming up. We got the big question coming up. That's just around the corner. But right now, Maddie, we were going to do a reading Brett Laurie's tweets this week, but we decided against it. He was in town, and there's even been rumors that maybe the Jays would be looking at bringing Brett Laurie back. But since he's been on the shelf, he's hurt this year. He's just not tweeting fun stuff anymore.
He isn't. He's lost his bravado. And, you know, he's not doing all the let's get it, you know, because he's not on road trips. He doesn't have the same ego like anyone would have being on a major league team. So his Twitter game has taken a major hit.
Can I tap into my inner McBain for a moment?
Sure.
Little Brett, all grown up.
No, not little Brett, all grown up. Little Brett, not on a major league baseball team.
Maybe he'll get his swag back.
I hope he does. Back. I want him to come back and go 100% bro again.
Speaking of swag, maybe one of my favorite swag guys from the managerial world is Brian Burke, who is the president of hockey ops for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
And this week he was talking to a group of Calgary businessmen. And even though this wasn't necessarily a scheduled topic, you know, on the itinerary, the recent deal that had been shot down by Calgary City Council to investigate something they're calling Sports Next, where they would build a complex downtown. It would be a big new arena for Calgary. City Council is tying it up. It's a negotiation that's ongoing. And Brian Burke addressed this. Maddie, I think it's time for us to play what they said, what they meant. Here's Brian Burke talking to Calgary City Council about the arena deal, which may or may not go through.
What Ken King said was, we're not going to make a threat to move. We're just going to move. We don't get the deal we need. And you're saying that's fine.
No, I'm not saying that it's fine.
Well, you just said Murray Edwards should pay for the building himself. The math works fine. They figured it out in Edmonton, but we're smarter here. They figured out public money is useful toward rejuvenating downtown and making a statement and keeping jobs, but we're smarter than that here. They figured it out in Manitoba, but we're smarter in Alberta. No, it's not just my view on this. Taxpayers all over Canada have figured this out. Municipalities all over Canada have figured this out. Most intelligent people get this.
So that's what he said, Bob. But here is what, and very eloquent from Brian Burke, just dressing down someone in the crowd. Typical Brian Burke.
So true, Maddie. And we've all been that guy at one point in time or another. Anybody in the Toronto media. Okay, Maddie, so that's what he had to say. But what did the president of hockey operations, Brian Burke, really mean?
All right, let me first say what Ken Kane can't say. Hey, public, give us lots of your money or we're going to leave, Bettman style. This is nothing more than a shakedown. When I say the math works fine, what I mean is the math works out great for the owners when the public foots the bill for a new arena. Is there anything more gangster than an ownership group with at least two billionaires demanding taxpayers subsidize their business? This is dirtier than anything I ever saw Samuelson do on the ice. You want to know why my hair looks like I'm the father of a teen werewolf and why I always carry a tie with me? It's to distract you when I say such ridiculous crap like taxpayers understand the wisdom in giving their money to billionaires. In hockey terms, think of me as the financial goon in the city council. But instead of face punching, I'm just going to beat up your wallet.
I love that, Matt. What you've suggested, yes, that's what he had to, that's what he really meant. Yeah. I love that because the tying it back to where he's like the Fraser McLaren of the business world. He's getting into the corners and he's letting his skilled players, i.e. his owner, Murray Edwards, do what he needs to do. Yeah. Put the biscuit in the basket. He is basically, he's making the other guys feel safe out there, Matt.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. It's like, no, Ken, this is not about Ken. And then Ken King is allowed to go, this does not represent the Calgary Flames, when Secret is like, good job there. He's pulling Brian Burke. Hey, Brian, keep saying those kind of things. My owner only has $2.4 billion. He can't afford... I hate it. As we discuss over and over, I am not anti-owner. But this, the shakedown they're doing, which happens in every sport, in every city, is the number one pet peeve I have in the world of sports. It is, to me, against capitalism. It is against the idea of you do it yourself. No handouts. You go and you get it done.
Okay, I'm glad you pointed this out because I agree with you. Of all the shady things that happen in sports, this one might be the worst just because you bilk the hell out of your local taxpayers. And there's never been any financial studies that really suggest that a downtown core is revitalized because of an arena.
There's not a definitive one. There are some numbers that say it's good. Some of it's anecdotal. Others say, no, there's no evidence.
I think it's great to have a sports team. I mean, obviously, we love sports. Yeah. I wish Toronto had two. But, you know, how much are you willing to pay for it out of your own coffers? And the hypocrisy. The incredible hypocrisy of billionaires.
Yes.
Who say, I need to build on taxpayer money.
Yeah.
You know, but I shouldn't have to pay taxes. I mean, no, it's a free market economy. I mean, all kinds of legislation, all kinds of restrictions on how I do my business. That's ridiculous. The most socialist organization in America is the NFL. They have revenue sharing.
Yes.
What's more socialist than that? And then they go to the public and say, you need to pay. Like, we are a publicly funded multi-billion-dollar organization.
Yeah, it's... It just,
and you remember the antitrust suit so that you could actually open up the books, because for a while they couldn't even open up the books on these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, I like what actually, I think Kroenke, the owner from the St. Louis Rams, who's now in L.A., he's doing, I believe, he's doing it all on his own. And I love that. I mean, you get to fully own it. And yes, it is more of a risk in the short term. But you know what? It embraces the principle of free market, of capitalism. And then these captains of industry are giving a middle finger to their own precepts. I hate it. Using Brian Burke.
We are totally for the free market unless we're against it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh. By the way, the it's one of my favorite rhetorical devices. Everybody who's smart in Edmonton got this, yeah. And everybody who's smart in Winnipeg got this. Smart people get this, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine a lot of the taxpayers who maybe aren't the biggest hockey fans, I bet they're not very happy about it at all. But it's so condescending.
Well, and you even remember Daryl Cates with the Edmonton deal, how he was, you know, him and Gretzky, oh, maybe we're just going to go down to Seattle, you know, sniffing around. Maybe we're going to have to leave. It is the oldest, most boring play in the book where the owner says, at least in Toronto, we don't have to worry about that because that would just, like, it's inconceivable to think that the Leafs would ever leave.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, it's,
yeah,
just, yeah. It's just inconceivable.
Well, the NFL did it for years with Los Angeles, where it's like, they would go to cities.
Exactly.
Hey, city, if you don't give your billionaire owner $400 million and some sweet tax write-offs, they're going to move to LA. You know, it was always the boogeyman.
Exactly. They used LA exactly like that. He was the Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
The boogeyman.
Yeah.
Of NFL financial politics. Ooh, LA is going to come and get you.
So, Bob.
Yes, Matthew.
Before we get to the big question and the top five, I got two different non-sports takeaways, and maybe we'll just chat about
one. Oh, we have more takeaways?
Well, no, just a non-sports.
Okay.
Just a non-sports thought that I was having.
Okay.
I was dealing with customer service a lot the other day where I had to be on the phone. By the way, a little update. Bob has almost finished his green shake. By the way, okay, now going on.
There's some kind of weird residue on the bottom of this thing.
It's all the dust because you didn't get to mix it. You didn't get to fully stir it. That's all that is. By the way, are you full? Like, how much of your day do you just go, I'm hungry? And by the way,
I spend most of it thinking, man, I'm mad at Matt.
which translates to, I'm hungry. How insecure, maybe you don't get this, when you're on the phone and you're on customer service. Oh, I got to put you on hold. Oh, let me transfer over here. Let me transfer over there. And you've been on for 15, 20 minutes. Have you ever been in the middle of that and then suddenly by mistake hung up the phone? Where now you have to start from square one all over again. The other day I was dealing with it and I was so scared. Like at one point I'm like, no, I don't want to jinx it. You know, it's like, don't talk to the pitcher when he's got a perfect game. I hit speaker and then I kept myself away from the phone because I didn't want my ear next to my BlackBerry, which sometimes randomly hangs up the phone.
Now I should point something out here. What you say is something that people go through from time to time. You're on hold, you accidentally hang up, but your experience, this is very different. Not because of the experience of being on hold, but because you constantly hang up on people because you don't know how to use your phone.
No, it's not that I don't know how to use my phone. It's that my phone is poorly designed.
Yeah, Matt, look, they...
Do you put a phone next to your ear when you're talking on the phone?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, that's all I do.
And you know who else does? Hmm. Every person who uses a phone. You know who else doesn't hang up on me all the time when they call? Mm-hmm. Anybody. You are the only person I know out of hundreds of people who frequently hang up on people in the middle of a call because you don't know how to use your own face.
I know other people who have BlackBerries who say the same thing. So how dare you attack me for that?
Are you still going to champion the BlackBerry, Matt? At what point are you going to jump off this? Okay, your computer, what is it, an Acer?
Yes, it is, Bob.
Okay, what's an Acer?
I don't know. It's a laptop.
Is that like a Sorny?
The
knockoff of the Sony products?
This has, it's a Ronex. It tells great time. I am not a champion of BlackBerry. What I am is I have a very good phone plan. And if I switch phones, whatever I get, the new data plan will be so much more expensive. That's really why.
Okay, you know what? That's a fair answer. Yeah. But I still maintain, and I would be shocked, please. At Bob Mackwitz or MCause56 if you want to hit us up on Twitter. At MackwinCause if you want to get us on the official podcast feed. Do you have a problem with your face hanging up on people all the time? If one person says, yes, that sounds like me too, Matt, I will, let's have a bet. Well, no, I guess if I throw it a bet, people could lie about it and then I'll get stuck with it.
Now, if this happens, I'm not the only one.
Listen, you are the only one, Matt.
No, you know how I know this? Because I just put up my, and I should not be doing
that's
this.
That's an iPhone, my iPhone that you're holding. Yeah, you know what it doesn't do?
I put it up to my ear so I can hear someone. That's all I do. And if it suddenly does the call hold, call mute, or sometimes just hangs up on someone, that's not me. That's on the design.
People butt dial people all the time.
I do.
Yeah, but people don't face dial people very often.
Who's the most famous person you ever butt dialed?
Whew, good question. I don't really have a ton of famous people in my phone. Does Landsberg count?
Nah. My biggest one has happened a couple times. There was two... I mean, Dan Shulman, I think, is the most famous one. There's been a couple times when I have butt-dialed Dan Shulman.
I butt-dialed Russ Amber once, the TSN boxing guy, but he was in England, and I think he was really mad because he picked up and his roaming charges were activated. And Russ is a scrappy guy.
Yes, he is.
So it was not a... it wasn't a great call.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a happy reunion.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not like you guys were best of friends to begin with.
No, that didn't work.
You want to do top five?
I do. And before I do this, it's a movie themed one this week.
Yep.
And we kind of picked this because we did our first movie review last week, and it was the Wonder Woman movie review. If you haven't checked it out, it's about half an hour. As much as it is a movie review, Cause and I were so scared to do spoilers that we wound up talking about 80% of just the experience of going to the movie.
Yeah.
Matt loading up on wine, bringing wine into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole rating system is empty water bottles smuggled in full of wine.
Yep.
We gave it 3.5 of those.
Three and a half water bottles of wine.
And so if you want to give it a check it out, I guess we could retweet it today.
Yeah, we'll retweet it. Again,
it's there. If you subscribe to iTunes, you know, it's there and you can just check it out. But what we decided to do was, it was an opportunity. Maddie and I got into the broader conversation of action heroes. And so today we are doing our top five female action heroes of all time. And I'm doing the list this time, Maddie.
Yep.
And then you are going to mock me. Okay, you ready?
I am going to, yep.
All right. So going in ascending order, starting with five, I'm going to one. I start off, and five and four are kind of the same, very similar. So I group them together. Sarah Connor from the Terminator movies. And then at number four, Ellen Ripley from the Alien movies. They are both badass characters, but what I think is both so interesting, what really works for me is that the character they are in the first film is actually different from the character they are in the second film. There's evolution to both of them. Like, if you think of Ellen Ripley in the first one, she's kind of she's a problem solver, but she's just one of the crew of the Nostromo, and then the alien comes, and she defeats the alien through a combination of smarts and bravery. But in the second movie, the James Cameron one, she is more of a traditional action hero.
Yep.
She's a shoot-em-up, she's leading the you know, there's a whole bunch of Marines, but somehow she winds up taking it over. So she kind of goes from damsel in distress
and
to action hero.
Yeah, the first one was fish out of water.
Right.
And then by the end of the first one, it's action hero. Second one, it's pretty much just action hero.
And the second one is, that's also true of Sarah Connor, right? In the first one, she's a damsel in distress.
Yep.
The Terminator's hunting her down. But for the second movie, where she's protecting her son, she is a total badass who knows how to use a whole bunch of weapons and is essentially guerrilla warfare.
Right.
So female characters are almost never allowed to develop. And I think it's so interesting that there's actually an arc to both of theirs. Okay,
right.
At number three, Buffy Summers from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
And I realized in my heart, Maddie, not only because Sarah Michelle Gellar was awesome, but I love Buffy for the same reasons that I loved Spider-Man as a kid. They're both teenagers. They both have problems. They're funny. It's heartwarming. Like all those things that draw a kid to Spider-Man, you know, the flaws, the insecurities of being in high school. You see them again in Buffy. So to me, she's like next generation Spider-Man. So she's number three on my list. Number two, a bit of a surprise on this one, Matt.
Okay.
Don't know if you see this one coming because she's only been in two movies. The Bride. Played by Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Yes, great.
Beatrice Kiddo.
Yep.
Wouldn't you love for there to be a whole new, like, there should be a franchise built around her character and the adventures of the bride? Because we only get to see her in the revenge play after they try to kill her at the wedding. But wouldn't it be fascinating to get to know that character better? They need to revive it.
They could have done a prequel, you know, just all of that.
They could do 50. They could do Rogue One, Kill Bill.
Yes.
And they could roll out. And wouldn't you see every one of them?
Of course I would.
She's got the Bruce Lee outfit on that's taken from Game of Death. She's amazing. And number one, my number one female action hero of all time, Maddie.
Yep.
And you're either going to be really happy or really mad that you didn't get your way. From Star Wars, 1977, Princess Leia. The number one female action character of all time. And I say this mostly because it's the biggest movie franchise of all time.
Yep.
But she's not a sidecar in it. And if you go back to episode four, the one that starts us off back in 77, she gets the action rolling. She's a major part of the action. She loves Han, but she certainly doesn't take any guff from him. And she's, you know, she calls him laser breath a couple times.
She kisses her brother.
She does, you know, it wasn't her fault. She didn't know.
Yeah, didn't know.
She didn't know. That was that. That's a whoops.
Yep.
That's a whoops. I think the bikini scene in Return of the Jedi is a little demeaning. But even when it comes back around again and the new J.J. Abrams Star Wars, Leia comes back as a woman.
Yep.
And she's an interesting general. So I just think she's a super badass character in a world that's so guy-centric that she's my number one. How'd I do? That's my list.
It's a good list. You are missing one, and I don't blame you for it. It's a good list.
Okay,
thank you. I mean, you know, I don't think I'd have Buffy that high.
Really?
Buffy higher than Sigourney Weaver.
It's generational, Matt. It's generational. There's a whole generation that grew up loving Buffy.
Yeah, well, don't count me as part of that generation.
Well, you're older than them.
Bob, you're older than me.
I know, but I'm young at heart.
I'm not young at heart.
I'm immature.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make you feel better? Look, yeah. I said it the way it really is.
Okay, you're right. Headline, man in his 30s obsessed with teenagers. I got it.
That's how old I was when I was into it, too.
I know.
Well, you put it that way, Matt. Yeah. It's kind of not cool.
Yeah, I did the math. When did Buffy come out, by the way?
Late 90s.
Okay, so let's say 97.
Yeah, so we're already working it off the record by then.
Yeah, you're in your 30s.
Yeah. So, okay.
The one that's not on this list,
mm-hmm.
and I love this movie, and for anyone who hasn't seen it, go and check it out. The movie is called Long Kiss Goodnight. It was from 96.
Remy Harlan.
Gina Davis kicks some serious... Like, they had to import sphincters from all over the world because she kicked so much ass in that movie. Playing the role of either Samantha Cain or her alter ego, Charlie Baltimore. Samuel Jackson is great in it. Brian Cox is hilarious. I fully recommend everyone check out The Long Kiss Goodnight. It's even before Justin Bourne, because I'll give you the tagline from IMDb. A woman suffering from amnesia begins to recover her memories after trouble from her past finds her again.
So it's got a real Bourne vibe to it.
Yes, but this is before Bourne.
Right. No,
before
I see your
just
point.
This was so check it, Long Kiss Goodnight. That was the movie I was hoping to be on. I love that she had Leia as number one because it would not be considered your traditional action hero, but certainly she straps on a gun. She does lots of
shooting.
She's
out there
killing
stormtroopers. Yep. And even though she doesn't have a lightsaber, and as we discovered, the Force is strong with her too.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, good. I'm glad you like my list. I feel a little ashamed about how much I always rip yours. I feel like now I'm quite negative and that I'm looking for holes in your arguments.
By the end of it, you usually agree more with the list, but you default to no just a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit of default
you know,
to
I'm
no.
I'm going through this diet right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. And then
I'm already finished my lunch. I'll just put it to you that way.
And I'm debating what to have for lunch. I mean, I got some sausage. Thinking about sausage. Probably something there.
Oh, by the way, the two that almost made my list.
Yeah.
Catwoman almost made my list.
Yep.
But there have been so many cheesy versions of Catwoman, I just couldn't do it. But if you're ever interested in that as a character, Jeff Loeb writes for DC Comics, and his Catwoman is amazing. And Jessica Jones. I don't think you've seen the Jessica Jones show, have you?
I haven't.
Because you don't have Netflix, right?
No.
How can you not have Netflix? What the hell is
wrong
Crave.
With you? I got Crave TV. It gives me every episode of South Park and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, but Matt, you've already seen every episode of South Park and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I know, but it's very rewatchable.
Yeah. Okay, something you need to know about Matt before we get to the big question.
Mm.
Matt likes what he likes.
Yeah.
And he likes it a lot.
Yeah.
And he's not super interested in things that aren't what he already likes.
Not true. I love
Stranger. Totally true.
Love Stranger Things.
Well, then get Netflix.
Why? I mean, Okay, you know why I don't have Netflix?
No.
And this
why?
Is so mean.
Just because of the data plan on your BlackBerry?
Let me tell you, I have Bell 5 on my TV. Whatever the hell that is. I love when the Bell 4 or TSN or...
And this is our technical operator, Matt Cause, who's stymied by the concept of a television.
All right. Do you know why I don't have Netflix?
No, Matt, why?
I got Netflix when it first came out because it's like every movie. I'm like, hello, this is wonderful. Huzzah. And I decided I want to watch Amadeus. I never seen Amadeus. So there I am, jonesing for Amadeus. I go to the search option for Amadeus. It's not there. And I decide on that moment, I'm like, no Amadeus, no me.
Okay, so let me get this straight.
Yeah.
You don't have Netflix because you wanted to watch Amadeus.
Yes.
And so it wasn't there.
Yep.
And therefore, you're not interested in the other offerings that it might have. So you didn't have Amadeus on demand.
Yeah.
And I'm the dilettante of the group.
Never said you were the dilettante of the group.
It's been suggested. Of course, I do wear silk scarves.
Yes, you do.
Right. And I'm wearing a pink sweater right now.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, you're very very fancy lad. You're a very fancy lad today.
Fancy lad indeed. All right, so if you have any suggestions for top fives, we always love to hear them. Just hit us up, mcause56 or at Bob Mackowitz, and we might pick yours.
Yeah.
Could be your suggestion for next week. Maddie, let's get to the big question as we sort of head to the end of the podcast today.
By the way, let's just say it right now.
Mm-hmm. Two-parter?
We're going to probably be two-parter. It's about 47 minutes.
Let's see if we can do it. We'll see. Let's see if we can get under the wire. Okay. Right, so this is a challenge for us. All right. Okay. Let's see how we do.
Yep.
So the NBA Finals has been a wash. It is now 3-0 for Golden State over Cleveland.
Yeah.
And what this has really obscured is the fact that LeBron has been incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible during this final, which is what you would hope to see and what we have seen. But it's really hard to enjoy because we framed it in the context of failure, even though he probably couldn't have done more himself. It would just be unrealistic to think that.
He should have had a triple-double if Korver or Love had hit any number of open threes, he'd have a triple-double.
So this week's big question, this comes from Maddie, is can you enjoy the performance of a great player in a bad game?
No. I mean, here's my response, because so many people have said, oh, you know what? It doesn't matter that Golden State's crushing everyone. It's beautiful basketball to watch. I can enjoy watching these individual performances. I can enjoy it to an extent, but when the games are meaningless because one team is clearly so much better, where it loses any sort of compelling narrative. And I think the people that are pushing that out there, I think they're a little bit hipster. I think they're a little bit NBA apologist, and they're getting their backup. And you know what they remind me of, Bob?
What's that?
We'll go back to a Star Wars reference here.
Oh, okay. Explain it to me in Star Wars.
I'll explain to you in Star Wars. I remember when I left seeing Phantom Menace. You know what I did for the first hour?
Don't.
I convinced myself, no, this is a good movie. The music and the duel of fates and that final. And I was trying to convince myself. Well, I knew it wasn't that good. And it's the same thing here. Runs convincing himself, Steph Curry, did you see what Kevin Durant did and Draymond Green and LeBron's getting triple doubles? And, you know, I have no doubt they, like I, enjoy seeing beautiful basketball. But if it isn't compelling, then it's incredibly hard to enjoy.
I wonder in some ways, like, who suffers more when a series is this lopsided? Is it a guy like LeBron who doesn't get the credit for his individual amazing performance? Or is it actually the great performances on the team that's doing the ass kicking? Because you make it look so easy, it almost feels like the competition isn't that high.
But
it's almost
it is easy, and the competition isn't that high.
Yeah, but they only lost one game, Cleveland did, up until the end of the Eastern Conference. So how easy could it be? Like, they were playing the second-best team, and the second-best team looks so bad. Like, it's almost hard for the brain to wrap around.
But here's the thing.
How much better Golden State is than Cleveland, so it almost devalues it.
I know, but Golden State is going to win its second title in 3 years. The year they didn't win the title, they won 73 games. Steph Curry is 100% healthy. Draymond Green isn't kicking anyone in the junk. And they added Kevin Durant, who had the defining moment of the playoffs. So for me, none of this is compelling. And then people on Twitter were talking about how, you know, I was joking, when does next NBA season start? People are like, it's going to be irrelevant. Because even though you'll have great players on all these teams and you can enjoy the micro, again, the macro, it's hard to enjoy it because it's not compelling.
And you know what? They're too far ahead right now.
Like,
now it's not competitive. And this is one of my rules of sports. I had a rule of life in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. Anything after 3 a.m. is a bad decision.
Yep.
This is the Makowitz number one rule of sports. If you're good and you don't have a rival, something's wrong. Something is wrong.
Ding, ding, ding. And you know what? I'm not against dynasties, but I like dynasties being pushed. And I'll give the example of the New England Patriots. Tom Brady has won 5 Super Bowls, but he's lost 2. He's lost in the playoffs before to Peyton Manning. And when they won all those Super Bowls, they were all close games. There was no blowouts. So you had a dynasty in New England, but was always compelling because they were being pushed. They had, you know, they had proper villains. You know,
yeah. Whether it was the Rams or the Panthers, there were often competitive, good games that they had to fight their way through.
The problem with Wonder Woman was the villain wasn't up to Wonder Woman's level, and that was one of the issues I had with the movie. The same thing when the Ultimate Warrior once fought Bobby the Brain Heenan. We knew who was going to win, and Heenan eventually won the weasel suit.
The quality of the hero is defined by the quality of the villain. And for me, I go to Roger Federer, and you think about the years where he first started to establish his real dominance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who did he beat? He beat Murat Safin. He beat Mark Philippoussis. He beat Leighton Hewitt. And then Nadal comes along, and the greatness of Federer becomes a lot easier to enjoy, because he's not just rolling over guys that they have no place in history. Like, we're not going to talk about Mark Philippoussis in 25 years. We are going to talk about the great rivalry between Federer and Nadal, mm-hmm. and then eventually Djokovic gets in there. You know who's maybe the greatest example of this, about how it's hard to enjoy a great performance in a bad game? It's an individual sport, so it's a little bit different, but Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes is one of the all-time greatest heavyweight champs of all time. But really, what were his defining moments? He beat up on Ali, but Ali was already old.
Yeah.
He beat Ernie Shavers, but... Larry Holmes...
It's sort of like revisionist of Mike Tyson. He didn't exactly have a lot of tough competition during those like 5 years when he would beat everyone in the first 50 seconds.
Right, but then you go, and even like Lennox Lewis, perhaps we... I don't know if Lennox Lewis is one of the all-time great heavyweights, but there were some great fights.
Yeah.
You know, particularly the Evander Holyfield fights. So we tend to remember those in a different way. So even though Holmes might have been able to kick the stuffing out of Lennox Lewis in the ring, we'll never know that kind of thing. But you just won't think of Holmes the same way because he never got tested. His rivals weren't good enough, so we could not enjoy the great player in a bad game in that sense. It's too easy. It's the sin of having it come too easy.
Yeah, we would appreciate Durant more if this was pushed to seven. Because here's the thing. In movies, we love the hero overcoming the obstacle, overcoming all odds. No great, you know, action movie starts with the hero having 17 machine guns and the villain has got a, you know, has got a water gun. And then the opening 5 minutes, he riddles the villain with bullets and then we're like, hooray, and the movie ends and the bad 80s theme comes in. I mean, that's part of it, is the hero's journey overcoming obstacles. There is no, the only obstacle that Golden State, I don't even know what obstacle they're overcoming. Just stay healthy and everyone get along.
The 2001 NBA Finals is generally recognized as one of the greatest mismatches in modern NBA history, right? And that's the one where the Lakers take out the Sixers, Allen Iverson's Sixers in five games.
Yeah.
And we all remember the heroic Allen Iverson. You know who the number two scorer, no, sorry, number three scorer after Dikembe Mutombo and Allen Iverson was?
Aaron McKee.
Eric Snow. Just throwing out some more names. Rajah Bell, Matt Geiger, Tyrone Hill. There's nobody on that team. So we tend to remember that one not as the team that won.
Yeah.
And the Lakers and how dominant they were. Shaq was the MVP. Shaq was the MVP in that series. And he averaged almost 16 boards a game and over 30 points. But we don't remember that because the team they were playing was so bad. What we remember is the scrappy performance of Allen Iverson, who had no chance to win and still put up ungodly numbers. So it's almost like I'm going to flip the equation there a little bit. We can't enjoy the great performance of a player in a bad game on the team that wins because we just don't buy that it matters.
Yeah, it's not compelling.
It's not compelling.
It's a shame.
Did we make it in time?
Yeah, we made it in time. We've got about like 2 minutes left. Prediction, game five tonight in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, Nashville, who you got?
I don't know.
That's a horrible answer.
Yeah, my feeling is Pittsburgh because they're at home and the law of averages would suggest that they're going to cough up a better game somewhere along the line.
And some of those chances will bury.
But their defense is so bad and they're getting so pushed around by the forechecking of the Nashville forwards that I don't know why that would change. It's just hard to believe that a team like Pittsburgh is going to look crappy five games in a row.
Yeah.
So this is a cheap and an illogical pick, but I'm going to go with Pittsburgh tonight just because they're due.
I'll go with Penguins as well. They've been outshot 123-91, but Pittsburgh is a good team. And eventually that has to switch a little bit. Some of those chances by Kessel goes in. I agree with you. I'm going with Pittsburgh tonight.
Predictions, what we're going to be talking about next week?
I think by next Thursday, we're going to be talking about Nashville's crowd.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about Justin. I think we're going to be talking a lot more about Justin Smoke. And will LeBron stay in Cleveland?
I think we're going to talk Leafs, Matt, because both finals are going to be over and the draft's coming up and free agency period's about to begin. Who are you kidding? We're going to talk Leafs.
We're going to have 10 minutes of Matt Martin talk, aren't we?
100%. All Martin all the time.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.